I have another
opinion. You're still popping off?
Brother. I'm not even trying to clout dude here. But
where's it at?
I had to put mute on yesterday.
You had to mute it,
when
right?
I was at home, because the shit was just...
Yeah.
As we're right now. I mean, you know?
Welcome.
I'm in the viral daddy club now.
Hey, this is Max from the Arkells, and you're listening to Underground Sports Philadelphia.
Going on, everybody. We are live with episode 100 of Underground Sports Philadelphia. Kyle Bennett, Matt Castorina, Don Ponteri. We all had the gray hoodie memo go out today. We sent emails out at 10:05. So, welcome to episode 100. Before we get started, got to give a shout out to our sponsors: Main Auto LLC, Hoffman Farms and Greenhouses, Ducharme's Pro Foot, Security 21. Wainwright Bernhardt Funeral Home, and Paul J. Gillespie Incorporated. What's going on, guys?
You know, just living the dream.
A century, man.
100.
A century.
We have an emoji for this episode.
Did you put it up there?
I can. Post edit.
Nice.
It'll happen. Post haste. You know.
We did it.
Matt's a Twitter clout god coming into episode 100. And
yep.
Yeah, he joined the club.
Shout out to SpongeBob. And
yo, one thing I did notice is we're getting a lot more love when we tweet something and then the pod Twitter like retweets it. Now people are actually like looking at what we're posting.
Exactly.
It's cool.
We're pseudo-credible.
Yeah, that's kind of what helped his thing pop off. Was our Twitter.
All right, well, it's a pretty funny meme, too.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah,
we can't all read.
I'm not trying to downplay the meme. Like, the meme was great.
It was a high-quality meme.
It was great.
If you haven't seen it, it's on Matt's Twitter, at Matt Castorina. But apparently Carson Wentz has an ego problem. He's an egomaniac. If you're living under a rock, apparently Joe Santaliquido from Philly Voice put out an article the other day about Carson Wentz.
Sorry, I'll say what it was. Keep going.
Absolutely being an egotistical maniac, people hating him in the locker room, and Nick Foles being like Bubba Gump and being, you know, Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky. But not like he hasn't had a Wentz agenda before.
This man's written like 4 different articles before this one about like his displeasure in Wentz and like trying to like badmouth him, and it's getting kind of old. But this was like the first one because I guess like people weren't paying attention to it at first, and now that the season's done and we have nothing better to do as Eagles fans, we kind of like pay attention to those things. Yeah. It was like perfectly timed.
For everybody else that doesn't know who this egg-headed goon is.
That's what I was laughing about. You see the tweet? The person was like, Joe Santaliquido has like a perfectly round head. Take that how you will.
He, in 2016, compared the Eagles to the Browns when they traded up for Carson Wentz. So that should speak volumes. Am I discounting that there are people in the locker room that are probably frustrated? Not at all. I'm sure there's 6 people, like he said in the article, that, you know, express some displeasure.
6 out of like hundreds of people that work in the organization. I don't know.
It's laughable. Yeah. You know, it could be anybody.
He doesn't even work for WIP.
He's a Philly voice writer.
It sounds like something that would come from them, though.
And they've been really rational about the whole thing, too, which is surprising.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's laughable. Go read the article if you want.
You know, the Eagles have a lackluster playoff performance this year, and here comes the divisiveness that's going to start happening again.
And the funny part is he goes on the Santa Liquido guy goes on WIP and like totally like invalidates his article.
Well, doesn't he say like for the most part he lied, but then like he still stands by his story?
Yeah, like doesn't make Philly Voice came out and said they edited and put words in there to make it more enticing. And the biggest thing that stood out to me is he didn't inform the Eagles that he was putting the article out until the day of, 40 minutes before the article was getting published at 9 a.m. Hey. He called them and told them at 8:20.
Hey, yeah, I'm going to put out this article smearing your franchise quarterback. Have a good day.
The other thing, too, is when the article was published, the like date of on the byline was last Thursday. So he had this article written already, but wasn't ready to publish it until he got like a final confirmation.
Those are like procrastination levels that I'm at.
Yeah, he said that he couldn't publish the article until he got a final confirmation from somebody within the organization that would like put it over the top with his editors and everything.
So wait, so they needed a go from somebody in the Eagles organization? Is that what you're saying?
One of his sources.
So somebody in the organization read this and was like, yeah, run this.
Allegedly.
According to him.
Now he's just trying to cover his tracks.
Me
now.
Being a journalism major and going to school for all of this, one, it's poor practice for what he 100%. Did, not letting the organization know that this story was going to run until 40 minutes beforehand.
100%.
Two, you don't publish an article without quotes. Every single
I didn't read it.
Every single quoted
it.
Person is according to a source. There's no directly quoted person throughout the entire article.
You serious?
You don't do that.
You serious?
Swear. Every single quote in the article is per source or from a source or somebody in the organization said.
Hey, man, I learned when I took AP history in high school. Because that's about the extent yeah. of my primary and secondary source
it's
collecting.
Just the whole lack of...
You don't do that.
And it's a shame for Philly Voice, too, because they employ some really good journalists. Kyle Newbeck, Matt Mullen.
They are good.
They're fantastic. And then you got this clown coming out trying to get clicks. Sure, I mean, good for Philly Voice getting their clicks and everything, but it's a really, really bad article.
I'm going to put the Foles-Wentz debate to rest with this article.
Yeah. He's got a whole anti-Wentz agenda. Go look at his past tweets. He was blocking people on Twitter for questioning the article.
That's the thing I had a problem with.
Including our guy Josh Lyons.
That's the thing I had a problem with is, like, if you're going to put something out that controversial, you better expect that you're going to get backlash. And you better be ready to, like, defend yourself. Not just, like, hide in a corner and block out everybody that, like, doesn't agree with you. Because now that looks worse on your part because...
And the next worst...
You're constantly losing credibility.
He tags four people that work at Philly Voice in the article again and says, you know, thanks to these great people I work with, one of them being Jimmy Kemsky, another great Philly Voice writer who covers the Eagles all year long. And then Jimmy comes out and says, I barely helped with the editing process and I had no part in writing this article, but I trust his sourcing. He literally threw people under the bus that had no part in his article.
That's unprofessional.
Yeah. And then you had Dave Spadaro come on WIP yesterday after Santa Liquido was on there and totally shut it down. He was like, you know, Joe's a credentialed media member with the Eagles and everything with Philly Voice, but, you know, when this team was 4-6, you had bloodthirsty media members there each and every day. Joe showed up maybe once a week throughout the season. You rarely saw him, you know, at the complex and everything. It's really fishy.
I think we've seen enough from another Philadelphia organization with the Sixers with leaks like this that I think you always have to wonder who the source is, if there even is a source, and what's the purpose and the intent behind that. Obviously, like, the go-to there would be someone involved maybe with Nick Foles camp, although, you know, I doubt he would be comfortable with that, so maybe it's someone behind his back making some kind of play. I don't know. You don't want to speculate too much, but I think you always have to consider, anytime there's, like, bombshell news, You just, like, you really just have to, it's like with the Wojnarowski and, like, Markel Fultz, like, releases. It's like, all right, who's giving him this information? Probably Markel Fultz's agent to, you know, get the public collective on his side. So I think that's important, always noting stories like this. I think it's very evident that this is probably, I wouldn't say it's downright false, but it's probably exaggerated. Maybe, like, someone once had an offhand comment about Wentz, like, look, it's a 53-man roster, and then you have a practice squad, and then throughout training camp you have, you know, like, 80 guys there. It's not unbelievable or inconceivable that at least one player could have had a problem with, right, Wentz. Like, that, it's the, like, you just gather 80 people together, and you're not going to like everyone in that group. It's just natural.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is that maybe someone had some discontent with him, but that's not what the article,
no,
made it seem, was that there was a genuine group dislike,
yeah,
or that there was some sort of split or fracture in the locker room, like comparing it almost to a Steelers situation with Antonio Brown and,
yeah,
all the friction you had
then
there.
Then you had all the leaders of the team, yeah, and all, like, major players.
And even, like, lower-end players. And apparently, I found out Wendell Smallwood put on his Instagram story, he screenshot Brandon Brooks' tweet to Fletcher Cox and was like, what Brandon Brooks said, and, like, a whole bunch of, yeah, like, the alarm emojis, yeah, and everything. Like, you have guys from the upper ranks all the way down to guys like Wendell Smallwood sticking up for Carson Wentz. You, yep, know, it was Fletcher Cox, Brandon Brooks, Zach Ertz, Lane Johnson, Torrey Smith, who's not even on the team anymore, Chris Long, Nate Sudfeld, Jason Kelsey came out with a long statement to the Morning Call, Kamu Grugier-Hill, Wisniewski, Malcolm Jenkins. I thought his tweet was great.
Yeah.
Now go to sleep. Y'all messing up my me time. Avante Maddox. Like we said, Wendell,
yeah,
Smallwood.
So is he really selfish?
Rodney McLeod went on a different WIP podcast to talk about it and was like, it's nonsense. Golden Tate.
It is. It is nonsense.
And yeah. Golden Tate was here for, you know, half a season.
Yeah, I think the responses from the players tells us that this is untrue, but I don't doubt that probably someone at some point could have said something about Wentz. You know, that's not inconceivable. But yeah, it's certainly not the issue as it was transcribed in the article that there's some consensus among the players that Wentz is selfish or whatever, you know, the point is here. It's just, it's nonsense. I don't think it's a surprise that this is coming out. When you really have nothing of note to talk about with the Eagles, you can't harp on anymore, yeah, about the playoff game. There's dead news now pretty much until you heat up to the draft.
Yeah.
So,
and it's a dead week before the Super Bowl, too.
Yeah, so it's also fishy with the timing of this article. It came out Monday, right?
Came out Monday, and
you know,
he also said that he had to wait for Carson Wentz to speak Monday afternoon before he could start anything Monday night. You had a week. Carson Wentz spoke last Monday. Not this Monday. You had time to...
And then couple that with the fact, though, that he only left about under an hour in between calling, yeah, the Eagles and making, when he was already delaying this. There's a lot of holes in this. There's, yeah, a lot of ways in which it just doesn't really add up and make sense, which, again, just, yeah, right from the get-go should tell you that there's something off about it. I don't know that he necessarily downright lies and fabricates stories.
I think it's exaggerated.
But I think this,
though,
is a wildly exaggerated, yes, story and accusation about, yeah, Wentz and his role in the locker room.
And I just think, you know, if you want to dive into, you know, the devil's advocate side of things, the one thing that stands out to me is that outside of Golden Tate and Wendell Smallwood and obviously Zach Ertz, none of the other offensive playmakers have come out and defended Carson Wentz. But
that doesn't necessarily mean, though, that, like, right, you know, you shouldn't have to go to Twitter just to say, like, yeah, like, this is,
right,
cool. Like, you know, like,
because now everybody's like, oh, is it Alshon? Is it,
yeah,
Nelson,
which is
Aguilar?
Annoying, because it's like, again, they shouldn't have to come out and, right, publicly defend him. Like, it should just be a known thing that,
yeah,
like, they're professionals,
yeah,
and they're not going
to throw back to when Alshon signed here. In his press conference, he said a big reason why he came to the Eagles was because of Carson Wentz.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, I think it's all smoke, honestly.
It's very.
So,
I saw a tweet about Carson that kind of made a little sense, and I wanted to just mention it. I forget who said it, but they said, you know, the reason Carson Wentz 2 years ago was so good was because he was playing at 100%,
mm-hmm,
and he was doing everything he needed to do. This year, he tried to play at 120%.
I did see that too,
and we don't need him to do that.
Right.
We just need him at his 100. And I think that was, like, very perfectly put,
mm-hmm,
because I think we talked about it here on the show before that, you know, he wasn't this season, he wasn't, you know, going back to practice the next week after like a bad game or something and trying to fix the mistakes that, you know, he had all year, like he did 2 years ago. You know, he would make a mistake in a game. You didn't see him do the same thing the next week.
Right.
This year you did. You know, you saw him have problems with his progressions, and you saw him,
some,
you know,
frustrated on the sideline, which we never saw before.
Yeah, you never saw that. And partially maybe his back had something to do with that as well, but, you know, we don't need him to be – we have other guys on the team that can help with that. He just needs to be at his 100, play his best. He doesn't have to overdo it, and we'll be fine.
And the other thing that sticks out to me with this whole thing too is – it might have been a couple months ago. He posted something either on Instagram or Twitter with him and his wife, and it was like, she keeps things in perspective for me. So I was like, thinking back to that, okay, what could that kind of mean potentially? Is it more about him knowing about the injury to his back? Is it, you know, a combination of things? Because it was right when they shut him down, kind of, and full stepped in.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, oh, you know, is he... So it brought this type of conversation back up.
I just see it as something like,
and this is nothing new with any star quarterback either. You saw this about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick after the Super Bowl last year. You saw this when Jimmy Garoppolo was in New England. You saw this with Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson. You see it all the time.
It's what happens to a franchise quarterback.
Yeah,
it's just what happens. If somebody comes to try and take your spot, there's going to be people that are going to like bring that point up and say, oh, is his time done? Like,
And I heard John Ritchie say this too. When James Harrison signed with the Patriots, he was like, you know, I wanted to go in there and hate Tom Brady because he played for the Steelers all these years, never liked Tom Brady, goes in there, and he's like, but I couldn't because Tom Brady was such a team-driven guy. Like, he would go and talk to and sit with every single player in that locker room. And you have all these other stories coming from the outside in saying, you know, Tom Brady's an egotistical jerk off. Like, him and Belichick don't get along. Is this the end of the Patriots dynasty?
I mean, he does kiss his son on the mouth. So.
That he does. He also doesn't shake Nick Foles' hand after a loss, but goes and seeks out Patrick Mahomes after he beats him.
Hey, can we talk about that game?
It's a phenomenal game.
Insane game.
Pissed me off.
Yeah, but I mean,
stayed up late hoping that I'd watch the Patriots lose. And
yeah.
A little bit of breaking NBA news. Not great. Victor Oladipo left the court on a stretcher.
Oh, Jesus.
With an apparent knee injury against the Raptors.
I mean, he had that injury early in the season as well.
Yeah.
That's rough, dude. I mean, for the Pacers.
Best wishes, man.
A lot of questions about that team and whether or not they were good enough to... Mm-hmm. They're certainly good enough to make the playoffs and probably at a higher level, but a lot of questions about them. I mean, if that's a long-term injury, that sucks,
wishes,
man. Truly.
Best wishes, Vic. That's crazy. But,
NFL games were great, and the refs were terrible.
Yeah.
We haven't been on to talk about the worst.
Yeah.
So I said to a friend, I think that is the worst missed call I've ever seen in any sport. Like, I've never seen anything like that in my life.
And now there was justification terrible. From the ref on why he didn't throw the flag.
What did he say?
He said that from his vantage point, it looked like the ball was tipped, and if the ball is tipped there, it's free game. Like, you can literally do anything except grab a guy's face mask or spear them.
Yeah.
Was that the ref, though, that was, like, literally 5 yards away?
I'm not sure. I just heard a ref say that was, like, the justification.
There was a referee that was literally no less than 10 yards away with a clear...
I don't know if you saw that video, too. That ref that was there runs over to the other ref that's getting ready to throw the flag and says, don't throw the flag.
Here's my issue. Beyond it being a pass interference, he targets the head very clearly.
It was also
very obviously see. Like, there's two very clear penalties that you could call.
There were
a
bunch of missed calls in that game, too, because there's that group of four pictures, too, of
the face
Saints
mask,
players
face
masking, stepping on a guy's
face.
He
drop-kicked the guy's face.
Yeah, it was a poorly officiated game.
The problem I have... that's the video.
Don't look at it. Yeah.
Oh, is it bad? Is it
that
bad?
It's bad. Just don't look at it. Uh-huh. I'm just saying his leg looked like an ass.
Damn.
I didn't wait for the zoomed-in picture. I just saw the on-court. Yeah, just get that away from me. Wojnarowski's trying to poison my eyes.
The one thing I have a problem with is the reaction and the in the ongoing days by Saints fans.
They are beyond corny.
Which is literally awful. You got people paying for billboards saying the NFL dropped the game.
You have lawyers filing lawsuits against the league.
Come on now. If that's the case and like let's say they did decide to replay the game, how about we replay the game against Dallas? Yeah. How about we
How about you replay every single Spygate Super Bowl?
Yeah. Like, there's no reason
to do
that.
How about you replay the NFC Championship game during Bounty Gate?
Yeah.
Where the Vikings
Which,
lost.
I don't know if you saw that, too. Apparently a bar in New Orleans is not showing this year's Super Bowl, but rather they're going to show a replay of the Super Bowl that the Saints won, and then the following offseason they were under investigation for Bounty Gate.
That's, I didn't know it snowed in New Orleans. All these snowflakes down
that's
there.
Some,
that's crazy.
That's some Cowboys-esque stuff right there.
I'll say this.
If I were in their shoes and my favorite team, let's be honest, if that happened to the Eagles, we would be livid, which is fair because that was one of the most unbelievable missed calls I've ever seen in my life in any sport, in any context. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, though, it is hard to feel sorry for someone like Sean Payton. It is hard to feel bad for players, especially as, like, Eagles fans, when you hear, like, Kamara, like, yapping about the scheme-ass stuff, and Michael Thomas as well, who, by the way, got shut down that game.
And Mark Ingram, too. And
you know, like, it's hard to feel bad when, like, that's been the rhetoric from them over the past month and a half. And, again, Sean Payton, a huge... Let's not forget, Sean Payton was suspended an entire season.
Yeah.
Like, this is a dude that's guilty AF of putting dangerous lives and careers at risk. And just being, you know, fine with
turning
it.
Turning a blind eye to it.
Yeah. Or just encouraging it. Yeah. Let's be honest. You don't get suspended for a year unless you are culpable for something like that. So let's keep that in the rearview mirror as well when we're feeling terrible for Saints fans. Because there's maybe only a few other coaches
I don't feel
in the
terrible.
That deserve a loss like that. I feel bad because it sucks, but...
I feel bad for Drew Brees. That's it.
Well, you know why I feel bad for Drew Brees? Because he still had a chance to win the game at the end of the game, and he threw
an
interception.
And that's the thing, too. It's like... All these Saints fans are complaining about the penalties and everything, too, but like...
Oh, but bro, we would have got a first down in the red zone, and we would have won!
The refs didn't blow a 13-0 lead.
No.
The refs didn't blow all the leads you had. The refs didn't make Drew Brees throw an interception in overtime. Like, you won the coin toss.
Yeah.
Go score a touchdown.
It's actually similar to, I think, some of the Eagles' discussion with the Saints game, where it's like, you know, I think people wanted to pin a lot of that on the defense. It's like, well... If you get shut out in three quarters, it was the onus is on you to score.
Exactly.
You make one more score in that game, you probably win.
Yeah.
I mean,
and we had chances to do so.
If Drew Brees doesn't throw the ball at Michael Thomas's feet, during that one drive, if he doesn't throw the ball on first down when they get the penalty to put them inside the red zone, you score a touchdown there and
you know who won the coin toss and won a game? Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Matthew Slater.
No, you know who did? Bill Belichick won that game. That game.
Refs also had some funky calls in that game, too.
Yeah. That game, however,
was very entertaining.
Mahomes is a beast.
Yes.
And, I mean, we've 100%. Been saying it all year. We've been saying it all year. And
kid is unbelievable.
He gets to the NFC or the AFC Championship game and goes toe-to-toe with Tom Brady, basically.
In the second half. Really, the fourth quarter. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Mahomes looked awful in the first
half.
He did. He was missing. I honestly thought they looked rattled, and I was really worried because they went down 14-0. I was like,
it was 14-0, but it felt like it was like 35-0.
Yeah, like Patriots are just going to... Because the Chiefs had nothing in that first half, man. I was seriously like getting pissed off. I was like, come on, man. Like, you're not even going to make this. Yeah. Like, I was looking forward to that game all day. Like, I had errands that I ran. I was like, I just got to make... I don't care so much about missing, you know, part of the Rams-Saints game, but I want to see as much of the Chiefs and Patriots. And, dude, I celebrated for like a half second with the that interception that D4 ended up being offside for that I saw. The
Yo,
I
was like, that was terrible. Insane.
It was terrible.
So bad.
The and one miscalled Tony
on
Romo had.
He was on the sideline, and he was like, did I really line up offsides?
Yeah.
The one missed call of the whole game Tony Romo had.
Let's talk about that. Everybody's been talking about it. And it was funny because when I hit you up about it, that was right before Twitter started talking about it.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, yo, Tony Romo's a wizard.
Dude, Tony Romo's been doing that, though. Like, I'm sorry, but everyone's acting like that's new. Like, that's literally been Tony Romo's thing, like, since he became a pro. Like, oh, this dude just, like, literally calls every play.
I didn't realize that until, like, I watched that game, though, and that was
And that's mostly because the Eagles don't play on CBS, too, so we don't get a chance to really listen to Romo.
I watch Red Zone a lot, so maybe that's why, because constantly you'll see him, like, he does it all the time. Like, it'll be week three, like, Redskins, Dolphins, and he'll be like, oh, yeah, it's wheel route. Like,
he just knows, dude. I didn't even know it was Tony Romo at first, and then you corrected me, I think. It was either you or you.
I don't think I did. I don't
know. It was one of you guys that did, and it was like, somebody, Romo said it. And might have been Nikolai. Oh, Nikolai did. And I was like, oh, you're right. I totally forgot he does this. Yeah.
He's phenomenal in the
booth. Then it made a lot of sense. It made a lot of sense.
CBS, I saw today, I think, is working towards giving him, like, the biggest salary of any
Either that Football or give him a defensive coordinator position.
Yeah, he's like, fantastic.
Deserves it. I mean, he's what's nice is like it'd be very easy for him to do it, I think, in a way that's almost like too analytical or almost too like
There were a lot of people that didn't like listening to it. He said that he talks too much and all this other stuff.
I think he's great. I could see it being a preference thing. Like, maybe you don't like having someone telling you, like, the plays, and maybe you just like listening to color commentary. Like,
especially when he's right.
That's why people like Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels, because they're less not necessarily calling plays and saying this is what they're doing. They're doing it in a more like casual, conversational way, where Tony Romo is literally telling you, like, this is what they're going to do. This is their tendencies. You know, let's see what happens.
I just love his energy, and I love like how like into it he gets.
You can feel his passion, and it certainly makes you more engaged in the game as well, because
I think Jim Nance better too.
It's rising tide raises all ships, you know? When you have someone that positive and passionate about what they're doing, whoever they're with is going to have to, you know, step up, or they're going to, it's a clear, you know, black and white.
At first, I was like, who is this guy, like, sucking Tom Brady and all this other stuff? Because, you know, he was just like, Tom Brady's so good. Bill Belichick, man, his play calling's insane. And then now it makes more sense when it's Tony Romo, and that's what's going on.
I mean, I know we don't like Brady. I know most people don't like Brady and the Patriots, but I think you have to talk. Like, I don't know if enough has been said about the fact that he converts on, what, 4 third-and-10s or 3 third-and-10s? Late game situations, on the road in Kansas City, terrible weather. And let's not pretend like he has the best options in the world.
Yeah.
They're lining Gronk up on the sideline.
Who's a shell of himself.
Gronk had just clutch plays, though.
Yeah.
Like, the thing about the Patriots, I think, that is so impressive to me, is it's sort of like LeBron, where they sort of coast through the regular season, and there's always questions about them, about how fit they actually are and how much is left in the tank. And it's literally just the mentality. And I think a lot of great players end up having this, especially later in their career, which is what you're seeing with Brady, I think, is like, just get me to January or June, whatever my finals run is, just get me there. I'll play my heart out for 4 weeks, and we'll get to a title conversation. But I'm not gonna take big hits. We're not gonna have Gronk running across the middle in week six. We'll save that for Kansas City when we need him, because durability, he just literally can't. But, you know, I think it's just as we said, man. Like, they cut through. Kansas City, obviously not exactly known for having a staunch defense. They fired their defensive coordinator this week. But they cut through them in, what, like 57 seconds to score that go-ahead TD. End up getting equalized going overtime. But, I mean, it was just easy for them. You know, it was like watching like a preseason game.
Saying this for years and years and years. And it just speaks volumes to what Belichick does as a coach for his team. You know, the Patriots always bring in veterans. They bring in veterans. They bring in guys who know the game. And then they have their, like, mainstays that have always been there. And, you know, you've got Gronk, who's a shell of himself. You've got Tom Brady, who's on, you know, the decline in his career now. You've got Julian Edelman, like, who's their go-to guy. They had Danny Amendola for the longest time. Like, these aren't
James
guys.
White.
Yeah,
Chris Hogan, who's a rookie.
Penn State lacrosse. They've got these guys that, you know, if you put them on other teams, like, what do you think that they're going to do? I don't think that they're going to be as effective. Like, what's Danny Amendola do now?
Plays for the Dolphins.
And
my
Dolphins. What's he do with the Dolphins? I mean, I don't really watch the Dolphins. You see a highlight every now and then, but, like, this is what
Brady
Belichick
makes
does.
The players around him better.
Brady makes
him
better. And Belichick's system makes all his players better.
Which is crazy to think about because Belichick's a defensive-minded coach.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter.
I think it's certainly, like, obviously, again, we hate the Patriots, and I think it's only kind of natural, too, especially with how we grew up, where they've dominated our entire lives.
Right.
My first real Super Bowl memory is the Eagles.
My first is I actually remember sneaking up at night to watch the Giants Ravens one, because I don't know why I was super interested, but my first one I really remember watching was Patriots Rams, mm-hmm. Which is kind of funny that we're getting that again this year in what, you know, who knows really with Tom Brady and the Patriots, but you know, everyone will bill it as it's the end of the era now, the end of the dynasty. This Patriots is how it started. Hey, yeah.
Get my man a ring.
It's interesting, man. Honestly, it's. Yeah. I mean, again, though, we're going to look at this as one of the most dominant periods, especially the like this decade.
It's insane.
Where they've especially made 8 the straight AFC championships. What, 5 Super Bowls in this decade? 6 Super Bowls in this decade? Yeah. That's like, again, you can hate them all you want, but you have to admit that's just
now, I believe, uber impressive. So this will be just Brady's 9th appearance in the Super Bowl, which ties him or puts him in the category with Bill Russell, LeBron, and somebody else
for athletes in any sport.
Appearances in a championship game. It's 4 of them.
I saw a nice little question online today.
Was Jerry West in 9? Jerry West was 1 in 7.
Kareem?
Kareem, I don't believe he was in 9. Magic was not in 9.
Definitely not.
But yeah, it's like 9 or more championship appearances. Brady, Bill Russell, and then
here's a question.
Somebody else.
Saw this on Twitter. Who, if you were going to pick a team, like let's say this imaginary Super Bowl was being played, Tom Brady versus Joe Montana, equal teams. So there's no difference in any of the players on the team except for them. Who do you take?
I have no idea because I didn't really watch Joe Montana.
I feel like we have recency bias just because we grew up watching Brady.
I'll say this. I've you perennially look at Tom Brady do this stuff, and like I hated the underdog stuff, but let's not forget that people like doubted the Patriots multiple times. Like again, I don't buy that they were the underdogs, but there were people saying that the narrative was true that this team was probably this is like their last leg, finished, and let's see what they have. Like even diehard Patriots fans were saying, yeah, this is like a terrible team. Like I don't know how we're winning these games. So I've just never seen in my life. Now, I never saw Joe Montana play.
Right.
I can't pretend to know, like, the ins and outs of his career. I can tell you that Tom Brady is one of the best athletes I've ever seen play a sport because he's just the long-standing ability that he had is just unrivaled. Like, I think he is, like, you mentioned, like a Kareem where it's just, you know, he may not have had the most impressive peak, which even then Tom Brady might have.
Right.
But just his endurance to play as long as he has and at a high level and to just be a consistent, you know, top-level player, that's just like, I don't know. What can you even say at that point?
That reminded me of a conversation I had with Kyle that I kind of made a little tirade on Twitter about. But, like, Kyle Kuzma tweeted that Tom Brady is one of his top 3 greatest athletes of all time.
Yeah.
Now, would you consider Tom Brady a top 3 athlete? Now, when we talk about like his standing in football and as a quarterback, yeah, I mean, like he's one of the best to do it. But as an athlete,
I mean, are you saying athlete as a sports person, or are you saying athlete as in terms of like physical ability?
Being an athlete, because now you may like, well, like yes, like physical. Like,
no, not physical.
Because
ability.
Like you make a good point though about. His longevity, his endurance in a tough sport, and to be able to consistently perform at a high level, that's got to play in. And I didn't think about it like that, but I was looking at pure just...
Like, I think you're talking like pure physical prime. No, he's not in the top 3 or 5. I think there's a lot of...
He's in the top 20, to be honest.
Probably not, just because you look at just some guys. You'd probably look at a lot of like... I don't know, like a lot of... NBA guys and look at them and just like they're literally like just physical freaks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like you look at a guy like LeBron James and it's like how am I even in the same human species
right. as yeah.
you? Truly. Like, it's just unbelievable.
There's a lot of tennis players, soccer players, a lot of people that you can name.
See, I think basketball guys are the thing for me because they're just as fast as all those guys you mentioned, but they're a foot higher and like 70 pounds heavier and can just out jump some of their heights. You know, like, it's just, I think we take for granted just what truly unbelievable athletes NBA players are. NBA it's players just, it's just stupid, athletes. Man. Like, I think the next probably most physically gifted athletes that we probably have in this country would be like secondary players in the NFL, because I think the agility you need to have, the speed, the hand-eye coordination, the awareness, the spatial awareness and intensity, like, you're talking about like literally just like some of the most difficult skills to craft in any sort of athletic, you know, player you're trying to build, and these guys all have
it. What about running backs?
Running backs is different because I don't necessarily see it the same way. Because here's what I think with cornerbacks and you know, like deeper safeties, is that they start at a disadvantage because they're facing backward. Yeah, and they have to
backpedal.
Just the way you have to move your body and just keep up pace with someone that has, an advantage of starting downhill on you.
I'll give you that.
And again, having to keep up with that person and maintain hand-eye coordination, be disciplined with your hands. You know, you're not getting stupid penalties and holding and things like that. The ability to switch and open your hips as quickly as like it's... Yeah. I know it sounds like dumb, but like I think we just take for granted like just what like gifted physical specimens you are, and it's so easy to forget that these are like the top 0.1% of like humans.
And you're also talking like this is the same theme throughout all DBs. Like when I thought about this when you were saying this about running backs. You know, you could have a guy like Darren Sproles, or you could have a guy like Eddie Lacy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And those are completely two different.
There's no Eddie Lacy's in the secondary.
Yeah, no. You don't have a guy that big who just, like, kind of plops through everybody. And then you got.
I'd say wide receivers are so more athletic than running backs.
Yeah. 100%.
Because, you know,
you look at DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
Like, he's an alien.
Julio Jones.
Freak.
AB.
Odell.
I mean, Michael Thomas. Dude. He just towered over everyone. Yeah. Like, just a human like that,
even
his
guys
size
like
should not be able to move and jump the way he can.
T.O. Like, was a freak of an
athlete. Even smaller guys like Wes Welker.
Yeah.
People underestimate Wes Welker so hard. You go back and look at his numbers, he was unreal for short little white dude 100%. Playing in the slot.
Yeah, I think NBA guys are probably like just, if you're talking like a pure like these dudes as just a human are just like in the top 99.99999 percentile of just every athletic category you can name, and I think probably secondary guys and wide receiver guys. It's no secret too, because
I put those guys. I have a little bit of bias with lacrosse players because I think that like them in hockey, like you guys really need to like it's not only endurance, but you do have to have a little bit of a strength.
Yeah,
on
sort
you.
Of like
you don't have to be the biggest muscular person like in football. Like basketball, you even see it. They don't lift a lot of heavy weights. They do what they can because their limbs are so long, so you really can't.
It's like Kevin Durant can't even bench press.
Exactly.
Just because of the way his body's built.
But then, you know, you got like lacrosse and hockey guys. They both lift a ton of weight, but they also have to have the endurance and stamina to continuously do
like Michael
shift
Phelps
after shift after shift. Yeah, guys like Michael Phelps who have to, you know, put in so many calories because they burn so many calories when they swim. It, you know, I think... You know, when
I mean, that's you're forgetting even gymnastics, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, look at Simone Biles.
I mentioned a couple of gymnasts when I was on this.
Simone Biles
is unbelievable.
It's insane.
Like, the human body can't move like that. I'm convinced.
Five, to be honest.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you could talk about boxers, too. Same thing. These guys, you know, can go for rounds just getting beat up on.
I watched Prime Mike Tyson videos the other day. Because he did a podcast. He went on the Joe Rogan podcast. Yeah. Was talking to him. And, you know, someone linked, like, his videos. Obviously, you know, again, I've never really been a big boxing guy, but... And I wasn't really alive even for Mike Tyson's prime. The dude was like...
The prime of boxing, the golden age.
The size of him and the way he moved, again, it's just like...
When he was 18, too.
It's like, just like, this is like someone... It's like someone put an animal in a human's body. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like you... Like, I can't believe that someone that big can just be that ferocious and fast and agile. Like, it's just...
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I think it's especially hard, too, when you look at these people on a TV screen, because it... I remember going to my first Sixers game, and you just like just look at the size of these guys.
Yeah.
You go to your first like hockey game, even you see obviously they're on skates, but these dudes just tower over.
I was that way last year when I went to Sixers Cavs and saw LeBron for the first time, like in person. Yeah. It's unreal. Even guys like even lesser athlete, like Dario. Seeing Dario up close is crazy. Yeah.
So, a short player in the NBA is 6'2". That's how big I am, and I'm constantly that. Like, oh, you're tall.
Like, I was going to say that. Like, you watch the game, and then you see guys like Lonzo Ball, and who's 6'5", but he's short out there compared to everybody else. So even you're like, TJ. Oh, I'm going to go and watch this game. Yeah, TJ's like, what, six foot?
On a good day.
Yeah. So, like...
TJ's above average height.
Yeah, you go out there and you're like, oh, okay. Or you're thinking to yourself when you only watch games at home, oh, these guys aren't that tall. Like, and then you go there and you're like, oh, yeah. Hey. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Look at Franklin compared to these guys. He's short. Yeah. He's an average height person.
Franklin the mascot, of course. And that's not a person. That's a dog, Dom, right? Jesus.
The person. Don't get the person. All right, never mind.
Don't ruin the illusion.
Never mind. I'm
kids
sorry,
listen
kid.
To our show.
I'm sorry,
are
guys.
You going to tell me Gritty is just a man in a costume?
No, Gritty is an actual thing.
I'm actually starting to believe Gritty might just be
like
an
Gritty. Gritty and the Fanatic, like those are like
Gritty
actual
is the true
thing.
Athletic specimen. I want to get it. I want to get him in a combine.
Yo, you see him skate? He can run some wheels. Laps around.
He's learned. He's got good north-south speed. I want to see his east to west though.
I want to see how quick he can change from skating forward to backwards.
Speaking of the NBA though, can we just declare Corey Brewer's a god amongst men?
Hey.
You are speaking to the authority on Corey Brewer fan account. Did you see someone took his picture to the Louvre?
Yes.
Someone what? Put it. Someone was, fought their way to the front of the crowd. The Sixers account actually tweeted him and said, thanked him for taking this because I forget. Look it up, Kyle.
It was John Winter.
Okay,
Corey Brewer fan account.
Yeah.
had the picture of him up and put it in front of the Mona Lisa.
That's so funny.
It's beautiful, man. I tell you what, dude, that was some of the most entertained I've been by just like not like good basketball performance, just by like antics on the court in a very long time. Him just going at it with Harden
was fantastic.
You just can't write that, man. Like, it's just beautiful.
You need, I was talking with Ryan about this the other day. When you have superstars come to your city, especially if you're playing at home, if you're playing a superstar, and the Sixers have been getting torched by guards all year, right? Most of us thought, God, James Harden's coming to town.
I mean, he did
we're gonna
torch
get.
Us, but...
Hold on, I'm gonna come around to that. You have to match whatever they do that makes them so good on the offensive end, on the defensive end. What does James Harden do well? Draw fouls, step back threes. You can't let him get the ball in his hand because he plays a lot of isolation ball, even though he does facilitate the ball. I'm not going to get into that James Harden doesn't pass stuff because he does. But he does all these little like ins and out, kind of like what Joel does to get under the other team's skin a little bit. What does Corey Brewer do? Picks him up full court even when he's on the ground to make sure he doesn't get the ball. Gets in his face and kind of, stands his ground. So when James Harden tries to get all, physical with him, he's drawing little fouls.
And then he flops on him.
Yeah.
He gives him the flop right back.
It's great. And then you see, in how James Harden's acting, you see that Corey's in his head now. And, it ultimately, affected the rest of the game. But now this is the thing. I was talking to a couple friends because they were placing some bets on DraftKings, and they were asking about the Sixers game.
Not a sponsor.
Game. Yeah. not an ad. They were asking, how do you feel about this? And I said, if you hold James Harden to under 50 points and, limit the rest of the team, then you have a chance. If you let James Harden get 50 or 60 against us, we're screwed. Now, any time you're playing the Rockets, you got to expect that James Harden's going to get 30 points. Or somewhere in the 30s, 30 to 35 points, because that's the kind of player he is, and that's the kind of season he's having this year. This guy puts up 50 for fun some nights. So,
which he'll do tonight.
Yeah, so, when he comes, 34 points, I expect him to get that. We held him to under 40 points. That's good.
Yeah.
You look at the rest of the starting five, they combined for 14 points. That's the job that you have to do. You have to hold the other starting four players to under 30, 40 points because the bench you're going to get some production from a little bit because they're not the deepest team in the Western Conference, in my opinion. But, that's the thing. If you hold Harden to under, those ridiculous scoring lines and, just let him get his superstar points, that you did a good job. And I think, you know, a lot is to be said about Corey Brewer, but it's a lot to also be said about Brett Brown and making that kind of decision to start Corey Brewer on the other side of James Harden because Jimmy's injured. Yeah. But, you know, Jimmy would normally be on there. But I don't think that if Jimmy was on him, that kind of night would have been had.
I don't know. I think that the issue was Houston just really struggled to stop us.
They did.
They talk about a blowout.
Capella's out, you know, so you have Nene on Joel Embiid.
They forced Kenneth Faried in there, his first day with the team.
If you just tell me on any given night, if Joel is getting to the line more than, like, 11 times in a game, we usually
win. That was the thing that was the
determining factor. He was to the line 17 times. He was just getting fouled constantly, dude.
That was the determining factor, too. We got to the line, like, almost double the amount that the Rockets
did. Whenever we do that, we win games.
Just like a simple recipe to win games. Just, you know, if you can get to the free throw line, double. Yeah, I mean, that's just – I think the Corey Brewer thing, I think, was just like – it's a nice injection of fun for this team that strangely has had this malaise around it this whole season. And I understand part of it because of the roster things and everything with over the summer and probably the expectations we had and the Colangelo crap and the false issues. I understand it. But at the same time, this is the best Sixers team I've seen in my lifetime. Yeah. That obviously I watched those AI teams, but I don't really remember. You know, I was like 7, 8, 9 years old.
These are better teams than those Sixers teams.
I don't know if you can really say that just yet. My point is just
I would say that.
In my time of just being cognizant and aware of like basketball and being able to actually watch it and understand, like, this is the most entertained I've been. Yeah. Like, I get that, like, we want to be analytical about this team, but this team's fun. It was nice to have Corey Brewer, like, provide a moment for everyone that was like, this is fun. Like, this is a dude that's, like, giving it all for us. Like, let's be honest, like, that's the type of athlete that Philly will always love. Like, you don't have to be the best player. Look at TJ McConnell.
100%.
Obviously, people debate on TJ and his actual effectiveness and what his future really is here. I'll tell you this, though. Like, he is still a beloved player in the city simply because, and it's cliche, but he gives it all, dude.
Yep.
Like, there's never been a question about his effort. There's certainly questions, and I think they're fair, about his skill and his talent level, but no one has ever looked at TJ and be like, I don't think you really gave it all. And I think it was the same with Corey. Like, I don't think it was the most, you know, brave and courageous performance I've ever seen, but it was hilarious. People love clowning Harden. And let's be honest, I love Harden. I think he's a great player. He does flop. Well, a lot of players in the NBA flop, but he has that reputation.
Known for it. What did I say when you in the group chat when you said that we were getting him? I said subpar offense, great defense. What did he do here? He had like two blocks, two steals,
and he said that three in his rebounds.
He filled the stat sheet up.
If who would have thought at any point this season that Corey Brewer and Joel Embiid would be sitting together at a post-game press conference?
Yeah.
He said it in his post-game, you know, I give it all. I love playing basketball, whether it's rec league or whether it's the NBA. Like, I'm going to go out there and give it my all. And
I thought it was hilarious when Joel looked at him and called him trash.
The other thing that cracked me up with Joel was, I forget what the question was. He was like, yeah, you know, last game we had some dude out there acting crazy off his ass, but I enjoy it, and I go out there, and I have fun. So,
can we also talk about Joel Embiid absolutely just backboarding Harden and giving him a stare
him
down.
Phenomenal lock screen.
Oh, my God. Is it your lock screen right now?
It will be.
If I could find a good, like, high-res picture, it'd probably... Right now, I have Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, like, hugging each other.
Mine was Jimmy hitting the game winner over... See, it's still my home screen.
Here's my take, though, on that play, just because, like, Embiid has just this knack of, like, just being already a great defensive player. I feel like what's going to be really important in this next stretch of games is, like, the national narrative about Embiid. I think we're going to see shift because that's great. I need one with Harden looking, because there was a great view of, like, Harden falls right in front of a camera, and you see Harden pick himself up like he's like Michael Myers or something. Like, he just sits up rigid and stares at Embiid, and you see Embiid just like on his haunches, just staring back at him, and he just turns and sprints. It's like that vine where it's like your little brother comes over, he's like, "What?" and then just runs out of the room. It's like that. Like, I'm telling you, dude, like, I really think, like, the next 3 weeks you're going to hear a lot more about Embiid. Embiid MVP, because
MVP'd.
It's like no secret that, like, with all these national, like, televised games that there's going to be just narratives, like, every time. And they're going to run out of things to talk with because they're already burning through the, oh, look how tough the schedule is. Like, that's already been beaten to death. They're going to be looking on
Jimmy hasn't played, so they haven't been able to throw that in there.
I think that's going to be the next thing we hear about, and it's deserved. And I was listening to the Zach Lowe post today, and they were debating about Anthony Davis and Jokic for All-Star in the West. And Zach Lowe said that, well, you know, that's going to be an interesting debate, you know, for first-team All-NBA center with Joel Embiid. In my mind, I don't think it's even that crazy to say that Joel Embiid should be above them. Yeah, I think any 100%. Way you look at it, you can look at it two ways. Jokic has Embiid beat on current team success. We'll see what happens you know, with the rest of the regular season. He'd probably bet on Denver just because of how well they played already.
He's got what, like 8-9 triple-doubles or like 4-5 triple-doubles? I forget what the number is now for him.
Jokic?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like it.
Yeah.
So I get the Jokic hype. I get that his advanced stats are great and that he's had a really great season. He is the guy on that team, and I respect that. With Anthony Davis, I respect that he puts up massive numbers and that he is, again, the guy. But you look at New Orleans as a team, they're not performing well enough.
He's also going to miss time, too.
Joel, to me, the reason – I think Joel and Davis is probably the closer than Joel necessarily with Jokic. The reason that I think Joel is so special is because – you talk about him on the offensive end and the amount of times a center getting to the line 17 times.
Unheard of.
17 times. And that's not even like a crazy night for him. He gets the line on average like 11, 12 times a game. That is unusual. That he has an 80% free throw rate this season. That he's a defensive player of the year candidate on top of that. That he can hit threes. That he's worked and I think he's improved on his turnovers this year. He's still... You know, he has his games, and he has his moments of bad decision-making. That's certainly true, but this dude is, like, as good as you could ask on both ends of the floor, which I think the only other player out of those three that gives you that is Anthony Davis, but he does not have the team success to warrant, in my opinion, first-team All-NBA or MVP honors above Joel Embiid. I think you could maybe make the case Davis has probably had better, you know, bigger performances or just nights where it's like, wow, Davis just took over. But Embiid has just been so consistent this year. Everything that we've asked for him to work on, he has. And
then some.
And then it's like, dude, he's amazing. Every night, dude. I'm, like, getting emotional. I love Joel. I'm actually going to be really bummed if the All-Star jerseys suck because I really want to get an Embiid one this year.
That'd be cool.
So hopefully they don't suck.
You know what else was very crucial to getting that block that game? Brewer decided to try to take a charge a little farther away from the basket than he needed to, which forced Harden to do his Euro step early, which slowed him down. And then that let Joel get that half second to catch up, and then the length of his arm is ridiculous, so then he can block the shot. It was a great, like, team effort on that, and Joel gets, like, all the praise for it. I mean, he deserves it because that's a ridiculous block.
But and it's on James Harden.
Yeah,
it was on James Harden. You know, like the guy who's, you know, a top three MVP candidate.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
God bless Joel Embiid.
Also, I just want to say, I just want to put this out there. I hate Russell Westbrook. That's it. That's all I wanted to say.
I know you want to talk about the Thunder game. What a terrible, terrible last play. That's like still like the wart on this team, among a few others. Yeah. But Ben just looked absolutely, like, as soon as I saw Ben bring up the way, like, that he did, over. And it was headed towards, like, the wing, I was like, this is done. Like, what's going to happen here? Especially when you have, like, lockdown defenders,
like,
on
first
the
off, that shouldn't, like, have been a four-point play. That shouldn't have been. Jimmy didn't touch him. He wasn't in his space. He didn't restrict Paul George from shooting that three. Regardless, he still made the shot, so we were still down by one. But the difference is we didn't have enough time to get a quick two. So you have to go for the win. We didn't have any timeouts, nothing like that. If he only hits the...
I think he had time for a quick two. We had like 5.5 seconds.
Well,
like,
that's the thing.
Ben can run the court that quick and draw a foul.
Yeah, I don't know why we tried to go for a win. We could have forced an overtime.
I mean, you could probably get an and one with that.
We didn't. Like, yeah, we don't get that and one 4-point play against us. We probably run a quick two, have Simmons run down the court and try to get fouled or something.
I'm not going to lie. I thought the game was over when Jimmy intercepts that
pass. Oh, my God. It was a beautiful play. Beautiful play.
Twitter exploded.
Oh, it was just like...
It was wonderful.
It felt like that was it.
Yeah.
It felt like that was over.
Here's the curse.
I'll say this.
Nobody expected them to pick up full court and double-team Schroeder and force him into making a bad pass. It was perfect because Westbrook's fouled out, like all this stuff. It was falling into place. And then
best part of that game was Embiid waved goodbye to Westbrook like we said he should.
Westbrook, man. Unbelievable. Well,
sorry, what were you going to say? You said you were going to say one thing and then I interrupted.
Well, I'll say this. Like, I didn't think the free throw was a solid. I don't think a lot of the – and, like, the four-point play, like, in the when you get fouls on, like, the three-point line, they're usually not fouls to me. It's all, like, yeah. A lot of it is, like, selling and, you know, just trying to pump fake them in and get the contact. I'll say this, though. Like, you have to be smarter. Like, Jimmy Butler is a good defender. You just have to recognize the situation, man. Just not even give the official the opportunity to make a call. Like, I know that sucks, like, that you're that's putting the onus point. Necessarily on the player, but...
That's a fair point.
Like, you just can't even give them the option of like, seeing yeah. something, you know? Because, they, you know, it's human error, so they from their vantage point, maybe it looks like he does get him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's... you know, of course, Paul George hits a clutch, you know, shot against us, something that he seldom does in his career. But, yeah, I mean, that loss sucked, I'm not going to lie, just
hey.
Because...
I thought it wasn't going to be as close. So far, you know, we've played 3 of the 12 games, right?
4 if you want to count the Timberwolves game.
Okay, so 4 of the 12
games. Bad the stats for the Timberwolves game.
Yeah, 4 of the 12 games. We've been playing well, yeah. Even in the loss. We have been playing well and staying with, or if not playing way better than mm-hmm. tough competition, quote unquote. We handled the Pacers accordingly. We went down to the wire with the Rockets or with the Thunder, and then
we humiliated the Rockets.
Now we play San Antonio, who was one of like arguably the worst teams in the West, and now they're what, top 5,
something like that. Yeah,
like I think they're
27 and 21.
Yeah, and now they're like one of the best or the hottest defensive teams in the last month. So this is gonna be a tough game. Pop's always a good coach.
He also says Brett's a kiss ass.
That was funny. You saw that, right?
Yeah.
That was funny. But
end of the first quarter, we're down 135-34.
I do think, you know, we're hitting our stride and our form right now, and that's kind of what we need to do. Because if we, like I said before, if we work out these kinks now, after the All-Star break, when we're basically coasting towards playoffs, it's going to be, you know, just dress rehearsals every night for us, and it's going to be great.
I mean, are we also going to talk about Landry Shamet and just the most beautiful Philadelphia boy? He's just like, he's just evolving and flowering in front of all of our eyes. He's like becoming like,
that's good.
A really good player.
Yeah. Hey, man, he doesn't rebound. He can't be that good.
Yeah. That's what this team needs more is rebounders.
No, I agree. I think that Landry, it's beautiful when, you know, you have a non-lottery pick actually like flourish into a very like decent NBA player, especially in his first year. So it's going to be like very exciting to see like how he like pans out in his career for us, because he could be a very valuable piece.
Per Clean in the Glass, Landry Shamet is in the 98th percentile of his position for points per shot attempt.
Wow.
Higher than JJ Redick.
Wow.
Yeah. Dude's on it, man.
Well, also, he shoots at a lesser volume than JJ, yeah. But, I mean, it makes sense. He
doesn't carry the load, but still, dude, like, just unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable guy. Love him. Love
Shout him out to Landry. I used to try to clown him, say he looks like a mix of Trae Young and
looks like Waluigi.
Klay Thompson.
Waluigi.
Yeah, per NBA cookies.
Him and Jonah Bull and Waluigi brothers.
But, that's who I'm very interested in seeing develop is Jonah Bolden. I mean, he's been playing well recently.
Mm-hmm.
He's been hitting more jump shots, hitting some threes now. When at first, you know, he'd brick them, and we'd be like, oh, God, why is he shooting? It's starting to come around a little bit, and I'm very excited to see that as well.
I think even defensively, you have to say, like, he's been coming in some yes. timely blocks.
Yes, rebounding well.
It's looking a lot better, and again, you know, like we said, we're going to start getting in this zone now where we're going to have buyouts to look at. We'll see what happens, you know, next few weeks of trades.
We're halfway through the season, and, you know, now we should be coming around and playing our better basketball. So it's good. It's good to see.
Yep. We have another Hall of Famer in the city of Philadelphia as of yesterday. The late, great Roy Halladay.
Technically. We'll talk about that, though.
Inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. Along with
it's fitting,
on Chooch's birthday, of all days, along with Mariano Rivera, who is the first unanimous Baseball Hall of Famer.
Completely deserved.
Mike Mussina, who got just above the 75%. And on his last year on the ballot, Edgar Martinez gets in with just, 85% of the vote.
He was above 75%. Yeah, because there was a bunch of stuff like Barry Bonds got 75%, I think, or something.
Barry
like that.
Got 59.5.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
Who did, somebody got 75, I thought.
Mussina got 76.7. Okay. So he was like just above the 75%. But I think it's a great Hall of Fame class. I think it's great Halladay got in. First ballot, totally deserved. You go back and look at Halliday's numbers, and he's honestly underrated for what he was able to do.
We were watching Pardon the Interruption or Around the Horn. They were having sort of the similar debate because they were talking about Curt Schilling not making it in. You know, and I said to you, and we agreed that Roy Halladay probably had the highest peak. Now, you know, maybe Schilling had the longer, like we were talking about with like someone like Tom Brady, right, where it's like, you know, longer sustained career. But Halladay's best years were some of the best pitching I've ever seen.
From like his last 4 years with the Blue Jays through his Phillies career was
amazing.
Unreal.
And that's even then is a relatively long stretch. You know, you're talking like 4 to 6 just like unbelievable years.
Like he pitched from 1998 to 2013. And granted, 98 he pitched only two games, but from 99 to 2013 to have a 15-year career, essentially, where you were the best pitcher in baseball for most of it.
Yeah.
Like, 2010 was overall arguably his best season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Goes 21-10 with the Phillies, a 2.44 ERA.
Jeez.
Pitched 250 and two-thirds innings. Gave up only 231 hits, 74 runs given up.
And I remember that's
68 of them being earned. And 219 strikeouts.
I remember it being a huge deal about getting 20 wins.
Yeah,
because that was the marker point for pitchers. I remember that being like the narrative was like getting the 20 wins is just like really difficult. And Halladay was someone that did it a few times in his career. But I remember specifically that season that just being like the thing that everyone could not stop.
Yeah, when you think about it, if you have a 4-pitcher rotation in a season, that's how many, it's 162 games, right? So, you know, with a 4 to 5 pitcher rotation, you're essentially playing like 40 to 45 games a season. If you're a freak,
the most he ever pitched in was 2003 with the Blue Jays. He pitched in 36 games,
so you don't even pitch 40 games, right? So if you get to 20, that's really good
to factor into the decision. Really 20 good. Times, you know, three times in his career. He won 22 games in 2003, 20 games in 2008, and then 21 in 2010.
Yeah.
One of the very few pitchers to win a Cy Young in the American League and the National League.
Just an amazing pitcher.
Pitched a no-hitter in the playoffs, which arguably that no-hitter is one of more dominant than the perfect game he threw.
Yeah.
It's one of the most iconic, like, Phillies memories of like recent time, especially for me, and definitely for like a guy like Ryan. He was there. Now the reason I said technically was, we were talking about this before, his wife said that, you know, he loved both the Blue Jays and the Phillies organizations equally and so much that she thought that it was not right to induct him into the Hall of Fame under a specific team.
Yeah, so he won't go into the Hall of Fame like most players do with a team cap that they put up a majority of his career numbers with. A lot of people thought he would go in as a Blue Jay, and I personally would have been totally fine with that because he only spent 4 seasons with the Phillies, 3.5, arguably.
I wouldn't have cared either.
But his wife said that he had so much love and admiration for both cities that she didn't feel it was right to have him go in with one hat. So I believe what they're going to do is, on his plaque, it'll just be the Baseball Hall of Fame logo on the plaque. So,
I don't know if you know this off the top of your head. Is there other players that have?
I don't know if they have it for other players. It's a good question. I'll have to look that up. I'm sure there might be. Whether it's, you know, because it's throughout all of baseball, so like the Negro Leagues are included, minor leagues are included, all that stuff. So it could be in there. But I thought it was really cool that you know, she's not going to have him under one team because he did love Philadelphia. And he said that when he retired. He was like, this was the cherry on top of my career to come here and compete and, you know, be in playoff hunts and all that. So,
question. So you say that the Baseball Hall of Fame, it has everything, right? Minor leagues and everything.
Yeah.
Are there any players who are inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame based off of their minor league career and not their major league career? Like, they were trash in the MLB, but, like, they were, like, a god in the minors?
It's possible. I'm not 100% sure.
I'm very interested
Might be one of those things
it's
where...
It's like a participation trophy, almost. It's like, it might be one hey, of those... we're going to put I'm you like in
getting
here.
Into the Hall of Fame.
You were really, really good in the minors. But
I think with both of those, it's more or less kind of like how Nick Foles has his 7-touchdown game jersey in the Hall of Fame, where like they kind of put different things like that in there, and you're recognized for that.
Okay.
But the full-blown like bust, plaque, all that kind of stuff,
you got to be in the majors. Yeah. Like that would be so funny, like if you were inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame because you were like just the you put up the most ridiculous stats in the minors, and then like you go to the majors and you have like a decent career.
What's your what's your feelings on the Barry Bonds thing though? Because that's something that again we saw when we were watching like Part of the Eruption and stuff about, you know, almost putting just like a Bob Ryan said, just put a plaque outside that says like, look, like these players came from an era where there was, you know, steroid use. And we can only judge them based off of what they achieved. You know, we're not in the business of deciding, you know, they did and what they didn't do. I think Barry Bonds deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
I think even him and Clemens deserve
even before you talk about his, you know, supposed where he starts juicing, like, his career was just unbelievable.
Still
man.
Insane. This is my take on steroids in baseball. I still think you, no matter, like, how much you juice, you still have to perform. Right?
Right.
You can be a guy who juices and be strong and can hit the ball out of the park, but let's say you have a terrible eye for the ball and you're playing against some of the best pitchers in the game, you're still going to strike out.
It doesn't force you to make contact with a 95 mile an hour
pitch.
It's
not like football where if you're juicing and you're making tackles, you know, and you just lay everybody out
NFL
or like
juices.
or like if you're a running back and, you know, with a Marshawn Lynch type body, and then you start juicing and you can run through everybody. Right. That's different. But in baseball, it's such a skilled sport that
it only does so much for you.
Exactly.
I think
you still need to
perform. My biggest argument with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and the whole steroid era being in the Hall of Fame, because I think they should be 100%. If Bud Selig was elected into the Hall of Fame, who was the commissioner at the time of the steroid era and oversaw it, let it happen, the players that were involved need to be in the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame is technically a museum to tell the history of your sport. What are you just going to say, 1996 to 2007 didn't happen? Like,
the greatest players of that generation, guys that we all grew up with.
What about Alex Rodriguez then?
I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Like everybody's
as much
eyes,
as you can't stand him, he's a Hall of Famer.
Exactly, and
because even
eyes,
before the steroids, which happened when he was with the Yankees, you look at his Mariners career and his short stint with the Rangers. He's a Hall of Famer just based off of that.
Yeah, and everybody's eyes, they always kind of look past it.
Yeah,
and I think it's unfair that certain players get the blind eye turned to their steroid use, and other players,
totally
it's
agree.
All they talk about, like Barry Bonds. That's all you talk about now.
You look at his Pirates career; he could have arguably been a Hall of Famer based off of that.
Yeah, you don't talk about certain guys and how good they were.
Yeah.
It's, oh, they need an asterisk; they're a steroid user.
And sure, if you want to put an asterisk next to their name, go ahead. Get them in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, for what it's worth, too, I think. For me personally, Barry Bonds, I will never forget just being glued in front of the TV when he was making his run to
night
the home run record. And it was like every day on SportsCenter, they had
that.
The tracker.
Yeah.
And it was just
that image of
that
him
event.
At the Giants Stadium with his hands above his head when he hit it. Like, that sticks in your mind forever.
He still had to do that. He still had to hit those home runs.
That was like, that's like one of my, like, that's like one of those sports memories that just like always just like, man, like that's like something I'll probably be able to tell my grandkids about. Like I remember watching Barry Bonds get that record.
It's kind of like how like
the hype around it.
People were able to tell us about Hank Aaron and all that good stuff. I don't know if you guys saw the little oral history that Joey Votto told during Roy Halladay's no hitter during the playoffs. I'm gonna play it because it's fantastic audio. So he kind of just breaks down his one at bat against Roy Halladay and how he was trying to throw him off during the game.
Here's Joey Votto, a couple of ground outs in the ball game tonight.
What I was thinking before that at bat, I need to like throw him off in such a way that maybe he gets rattled and hits me. So I get in the box, and as Roy gets on the mound, I call timeout.
Halladay was ready to whine, and time was called to the plate.
I take a pitch or two, and I say, I'm going to call timeout again.
Now time called again as Halladay begins his windup.
I ended up making it out that at bat. And next year at the All-Star game, he said, hey, remember when you called timeout twice during that at bat? I wanted to kill you. If I could have, I would have walked to home plate and choked you to death.
That's funny.
In typical Joey Votto fashion.
That's hilarious, actually.
But it's just like little things like that, too, about Roy Halladay, where like he was so composed, even during a guy trying to like throw him off his game during that high leverage situation where he's trying to, you know, just compete and probably doesn't realize he has a no hitter going on, but throws a no hitter and you have a guy trying to throw him off, and it's the nature of the sport, and he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, and I'm 100%. Glad he's in. So congratulations to Roy Halladay and his family for, you know, an amazing career and unfortunately a life gone far too soon. Mm-hmm. Final topic of the night, our Wall of Fame. If you guys checked it out on Twitter, the fan vote ended today. We won't announce all of our inductees until February 7th, our 1 year of being, you know, a thing. But our Legends ballot has closed. We have our Legends ballot inductees tabulated across the board from, you know, our end and from the fan vote. The next ballot will go out tomorrow. We're going to formulate who's going to be on that one. But make sure you're voting in our Wall of Fame polls on Twitter, and get involved and help us celebrate our milestones, because we're going to keep doing this each and every year, and I think it's going to be a fun way for us to kind of
I really do like the idea.
Celebrate and remember when, you know, we became a thing. So make sure you're voting in our Wall of Fame ballots, whatever they come out.
Our table doubled in size.
Our room doubled. But I think that's going to wrap things up for tonight. A little bit of a longer show, but you had a lot to talk about. So
started a little late, too.
Yeah.
You know.
It's also the return of Marco Bellinelli tonight.
Belly. God bless him.
Shoot out the confetti. And final thing, too.
Yo, you know what would be crazy? If the Sixers win and they shot confetti tonight because
I said they should, when they introduced him, they should have shot like little things of confetti as he walked in. But one final thing, too. Shout out, when we were talking about the NFL, shout out to Jameel Demby for going to the Super Bowl in his rookie year.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that.
Bring the Lombardi to Vineland.
He put it up on his Instagram story today.
Got his jersey today. I talked to him throughout the week. He's very excited.
Let us get that jersey.
We're working on getting Jameel on the show to preview the Super Bowl with us as well. So that will be very fun. It's probably going to come next week, but we're going to work on it to happen. But congratulations to Jameel, rookie season, going to the Super Bowl. He's an NFC champion, and we couldn't be more proud. But this show presented by Main Auto LLC, Hoffman Farms and Greenhouses, Ducharme's Pro Foot, Security 21, Wainwright Bernhardt Funeral Home, and Paul J. Gillespie Incorporated. Like we've been saying, Saturday we will be at Ducharme's for our show, so if you're in the area, come hang out at Ducharme's. We will be there. But yeah, we'll catch you guys on Saturday live, and then we'll have a Wings post-game show on Saturday as well, and a new Outside the Box will be uploaded on Friday. But for everybody here at Underground Sports Philadelphia, thank you for 100 episodes of listening to us banter, and
hopefully we got another 100 more.
Crazy about Philadelphia sports. But for Dom, for Matt, and everybody here at Underground Sports Philadelphia, I'm Kyle, and we are signing off. Peace.